On the phone with us from the West Virginia Soccer Association State Referee Administrator, Mike McCarthy. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Marcus.
Well, let's go ahead and get started with some of the new changes that folks might be getting used to or need to get used to as we head into the fall soccer season. Some changes, some additions, some modifications to the laws of the game. Mike, why don't you kind of give us a little bit of background history on that?
Okay, sure. So the International Football Association Board, or the IFAB, is the group that writes the laws, implements the changes, promulgates the laws, and the changes that they have released from their meeting last March became effective for all competitions that began on or after June 1st. So these will apply to all of the fall leagues here in West Virginia, the youth leagues, the adult amateur leagues, and all leagues going forward.
Now, what's probably the biggest change or modification that folks should be knowing about?
Well, there are a few of them. Let me kind of scroll through here. Probably the biggest change that the referees will see in terms of dealing with team officials is that the laws now empower the referee to show yellow cards and red cards to team officials. A lot of folks might not realize that this is a change, since yellow cards and red cards have been used for some time in American high school and in American college soccer. But for the rest of the world, up until this most recent change, the referee would use what we call the ask, tell, dismiss approach if necessary when dealing with team officials. But now the laws of the game do empower the referee to show the yellow card, and if the misconduct continues, to show the red card and send off a team official.
And that includes the coach, that would be the assistant coach, anybody that's on the bench that is a non-player, correct?
Correct, yes.
So that's going to be certainly, because I know you know, high school has done that for a while now, as well as at the college rankings, and I think a lot of people were confused at that point. Because I mean, I think a lot of people get confused with the fact that there are these rules that the rest of the world does, and then you have the law, you know, the rules that come into effect for high school and,
right,
and collegiate. So I'm sure,
yeah, you know, that's an understandable bit of confusion, and you know, candidly, it's challenging for the referees ourselves to keep track of. So I think this will establish a pretty clear standard that, you know, some of our recreational coaches themselves are college coaches or high school coaches in the off season, and now they can know what to expect from referees across the board. So hopefully that will add some clarity to that interaction in those times when it has to exist.
What's another modification to the laws?
The next modification is with regard to the restart on goal kicks and free kicks. Historically, the ball at the taking of a goal kick or at the taking of a free kick by the defending team inside the penalty area was not in play until it was kicked outside of the penalty area directly. But now the ball is in play once it is kicked and moves. So at the upper levels, you know, this largely doesn't make much difference. The older players, the stronger players, often kick the goal kicks or the free kicks far downfield. But at some of the younger youth levels, the 9v9 level, for example, this might make a difference, where a goal kick that doesn't quickly leave the penalty area is essentially in play, and an attacking player can enter that penalty area and win the ball and perhaps score from that what should have been a very safe defensive restart.
Right. I know I was watching English Premier League this past weekend, and that still kind of threw me off of having somebody with inside the penalty area that, you know, a defender and the goalkeeper would just play the ball to them, and then they would continue to build out of the back.
Right.
You know, you sit there and you think, it's like, no, the ball should have went out. No, that's right. We've got the modification. And it took, I mean, it really did take me a while, especially, you know, I've been a referee for a number of years, and just that level of thinking. So it's, you know, I'm sure it's going to be challenging, to say the least, to probably, you know, get our families and players and parents used to those kinds of things. I think one thing folks would like to know is, what is the West Virginia Soccer Association referee program doing to help our referees understand these new modifications, as well as help them implement them correctly?
We have an email newsletter that goes out periodically, so we have been providing these changes to our referees on our Facebook group, on our website, through our email newsletter. This year, the IFAB has put together a very rich PDF document that not only describes the text of the changes, but includes some really good video clips embedded right there in the PDF document to illustrate how these changes might change the way the game is played. So the IFAB themselves have done a good job of sort of level setting and establishing a consistent message to referees around the world. And we're simply doing our best to promulgate that message and distribute it to our referees as well.
What are some other changes that folks can be expecting this upcoming fall season?
One other change with regard to free kicks, in addition to the fact that the a free kick taken by the defending team in their own penalty area is in play once it is kicked and moves. Another change is that when there is a wall of three or more defending players at the taking of a free kick, no attacking players are allowed within 1 yard of that wall. So, you know, at the upper levels, competitive levels, sometimes there's some jostling for position in the walls where attacking players try to insert themselves. Well, that's just not going to be permitted anymore. So anytime there's a defensive wall of three or more players, the attackers have to be at least a yard away from that.
Now, we'll certainly prove challenging, you know, making sure that referees are making sure that new change is implemented correctly.
Right. It's going to take some player management, some personality skills from the referee to manage that and be proactive and preemptive to prevent those kinds of issues.
And one thing that I've always liked about the West Virginia Soccer Association referee program is just the mentoring that goes on with our referees, and being able to provide them with guidance and provide them with instruction and provide them with feedback. Just to kind of gear a little bit off subject for a little bit, obviously we had the 2019 USU Soccer East Region President's Cup and the East Region Championships here in West Virginia between Barboursville and Dunbar. And a lot of referee mentoring was going on there. A lot of instruction was going on, and a lot of things along that lines. And just how valuable of a tool is that to up and coming referees, as well as our veteran referees?
It's I can't stress enough how important and valuable that is. Not only were our referees, as well as referees from other parts of the region who came to our state for these events, not only were they receiving instruction from more than 25 different referee coaches, national referee coaches, and pro referees, it's not only the instruction that these folks can bring, it is the inspiration that they bring. For example, during the regional NCS event, the referee crew from the Columbus Crew game came down to Shawnee and hung out for a couple of days with those referees. One of those referees is a FIFA assistant referee himself. So to have that caliber of referees who can interact with our referees of all age groups and can relate to them and can say, hey, look, I remember when I was a grassroots referee like you are right now. And this is some of the things that I found challenging. And these were some of the tools that I used to address those challenges. Just an incredibly uplifting atmosphere for all of the folks who had the opportunity to share in that.
I know my daughter, she participated as a referee at both of those regional events, and she was a little bit nervous going into them just for the fact that the level of referee mentors and those who were going to be there to offer instruction, offer advice. And she was a little bit nervous, you know, of, wow, you know, these guys, you know, some of these people are FIFA referees, you know, they're so way above my level. And she came out of it feeling so much better because she felt that they were, to an extent, yeah, I mean, she felt that they were there to help.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they made it clear. Everything they said, everything they did, all of their demeanor just made it clear that they were on the side of the referees. They weren't there to give them grief or yell at them or anything. They were there to coach them. They were there to develop them. So, yeah, again, just absolutely uplifting experience for everybody who's involved with that.
And it's amazing, too, just how one, the way you look at something just from a different perspective, or maybe, you know, something happened during a match and something was communicated to the players or to a coach this way. And then one of those mentors came and said, if you would have changed this word to this word, how would you have perceived it differently? That maybe was a better way to communicate what you were trying. And it was amazing just how slight changes can make such a dramatic difference.
Yeah, it really is an opportunity to develop the referees and the whole process, just like it is with players. The whole process is equipping these people with tools and options and allowing them to make the decision, allowing them to reflect on that decision and judge for themselves whether it was the right decision, whether there might have been a better option, a better tool in the toolbox to use in any particular moment. Because that's the only way that referees develop and get better, just like players. They have to be in game situations. There's no other option for that to really improve a referee. I was participated in a coaching course this past weekend that Tomas Olivier conducted at the Shawnee Sports Complex. And I explained to the coaches that, you know, we do a lot of the same thing with referees that the coaches do with players. It's just that our style is a little bit different. We're not conveying tactical instructions to the referee during play. That just doesn't work. So we have brief moments at halftime or after the game or between games to give them little nuggets, to try to give them one or two things to improve, to make them better for their next game. And even more importantly, to empower them to pay it forward to the other referees that they then work with. So it's a perhaps a slower promulgation of information and development, but I certainly hope that coaches and players and spectators around the state understand that we're doing it. We have a system in place that is improving the referee program, and we're seeing the results from it.
Yeah, especially we see a lot of our West Virginia referees that are going on to that have went to go on to the national competitions for President's Cup as well as the NCS Championship Series.
Yeah.
And we had a ton of West Virginia referees that participated in the regional events this year. And I don't want to say I was dramatically surprised, but normally, you know, in this world, in this society that we live in, we don't hear a lot of good news. and we did with our referees.
Yeah, we had over 40 different referees between President's Cup and the regional NCS. 40 different West Virginia referees participate. Some of these had planned to attend for weeks or months, and some of them, God bless them, they answered a phone call from me early on a Friday or Saturday morning, and they showed up at the field with their gear because some other referee, something had happened, and maybe they hadn't been able to attend, or maybe they got injured. So, you know, I was overwhelmed and touched by the degree to which our state referee corps stepped up and represented to help those events be as successful as they are. And in the last 2 years, we've had 5 different referees be invited to officiate at national level U.S. youth soccer events. So that, I think that's, that again, speaks to some of the progress that we're making and speaks to the hard work that the referees themselves are investing in their own development.
Mike, let's go ahead back to our original subject and see if there are a couple more modifications to the laws of the game that we want to share with our listeners.
There are a few modifications with regard to the drop ball procedure. That the drop ball is so rare of an event that it really doesn't affect the game, or it really shouldn't be a game critical kind of event. But there are a couple of nuances. You know, if the play is stopped in the penalty area, the ball will be dropped directly and exclusively to the goalkeeper. If play is stopped outside the penalty area, the ball will be dropped to one player for the team that last touched it. In all cases, the players from the opposing team, or actually all other players, must be at least 4 yards away from the taking of the drop ball. And probably only the only one that you might see make a little bit of a difference is that if the ball touches the referee or any other match official and either goes into the goal or changes possession or results in a promising attack, then the referee is to blow the whistle and restart with a drop ball instead. We really don't want an awkward situation where a ball ricochets off of a referee and results in a goal scoring opportunity for one of the two teams. That's a referee's bad day, trust me. So the laws have now changed to direct the referee to stop the play in that event. If the ball changes possession, a promising attack occurs, or it goes directly into the goal, and restart with a drop ball instead.
Well, Mike, that's certainly a lot to digest as we head into the fall season. Of course, our next West Virginia Soccer Association event that we have coming up the last weekend of October, Target United Cup. We will have our West Virginia referee program referees on hand working within that competition and putting into practice all these new modifications to the laws of the game.
There are a couple more that I should mention as well.
Okay.
At the taking of a penalty kick, the goalkeeper previously was required to have both feet on the goal line or in line with the goal line. The IFAB have relaxed that just a little bit. The goalkeeper now has to have part of at least 1 foot on the line or in line with the goal line. And, you know, candidly, this is probably just a reflection of the fact that most goalkeepers are allowed to take a half step off the goal line at the taking of those penalty kicks. So the laws have come in line now with what was really the de facto implementation up until now. At the taking of the kickoff, the team that wins the coin toss now can choose either which end of the field to attack, which previously was their only choice, or they can choose to themselves take the kickoff. So again, those people who are familiar with the way things work in American high school soccer will be familiar with that concept. And finally, there were some clarifications that were issued with regard to handball situations. A deliberate handball is always an offense. It always has been. It always will be. That is what defines the sport of soccer. But there are certain instances now where even accidental contact with the hand or the arm will result in a free kick. So, for example, if the ball goes directly into the goal after touching an attacking player's hand or arm, the goal will not count, and it will be a free kick for the defense instead. Or if the player gains control of the ball and creates a goal-scoring opportunity, again, even if it was accidental contact, the goal's not going to count. It's going to be a free kick for the defense instead. If the ball touches a player's hand or arm, which has made their body unnaturally bigger, or is above their shoulder, then that's going to result in a free kick. With one exception on that last note, if the player's hand is above their head or shoulder, but the ball previously made contact with a legal part of the player's body, like their head, their body, or their foot, and then makes contact with the arm, then it's generally not going to be considered a foul and not going to result in a free kick. But all of these, of course, are always in the opinion of the referee. So, you know, none of this is hard and fast. None of this is a precise algorithm that the referee applies with the same result for every referee. Players and teams should understand that there's still a human element to it, and that the best advice they can receive is to adapt their play to the referee as an element within that performance environment. And the team that more quickly adapts itself is going to have the advantage and is probably going to have more chances for success.
Same way you would adapt to the field conditions?
Exactly. Sometimes the ground is
weather
wet.
Conditions.
Sometimes it's dry. Sometimes the wind is strong. Sometimes it's not. So, yeah, all of these are part of what U.S. soccer now calls the performance environment of the player. And, again, those coaches who can most effectively teach their players to adapt to the conditions of those performance environments, those players themselves who can most effectively be creative and find ways to adapt them are going to be more successful. And the referee is just one element of that.
And, of course, the big question on everybody's mind is, when are we introducing VAR in West Virginia? I say that in an all-joking manner.
Sure,
Mike.
Sure, absolutely.
Now, before we go, Mike, of course, it wouldn't be proper unless we let folks know that we do have some new referee courses coming up that they can attend around the state. We just got done having, I think, one up in the Panhandle, wasn't it?
Yes, we had one in late July up in Martinsburg. Yep. That was the first of our courses that we're conducting under U.S. Soccer's new curriculum, its new grassroots referee curriculum. There is a very sophisticated, very interactive online training module now that U.S. Soccer has developed in cooperation with Noggin Labs that all new grassroots referees and all recertifying grassroots referees will go through. And then the curriculum now for training referees by our instructors here in West Virginia, it relies much, much less on sitting in a classroom and looking at PowerPoints and relies much, much more on getting out on the field, going through game-like situations, and having experience that is holistic, experiential, and reality-based. So we're trying to recreate the game environment as much as we can in the courses themselves to better prepare those referees to for their very first games and for a successful career.
Now, if somebody is interested in becoming a referee and would like to go through one of these courses, or even, you know, somebody that, you know, may not necessarily have the ultimate goal of being a referee, but would like to know more about being a referee so that they can understand the game better. Because I'll be honest, as soon as I took the referee course many, many years ago, it helped my understanding of the game, helped me appreciate the referee crew out on the field, and made me a better tempered coach and parent on the sidelines, where can they go to find out where the new classes are being held?
Yeah, the best resource is our state referee program website, which is available at wvsareferees.org. And right there on the front of the website, we have a calendar of upcoming clinics. And there's a menu item very close to the middle of the page, right there on the top, labeled Becoming a Referee. And that menu item of Becoming a Referee will explain the overall process, the creation of a profile in the U.S. Soccer's Learning Center, the online grassroots course, and then the in-person courses as well. So that would be the single best place that anyone can go if they're interested in learning more about it or becoming a referee themselves.
So that's wvsareferees.org.
Yep.
And if you can't remember that, you can certainly go to our website, wvsoccer.net, click on ref, and that'll take you directly right to that page, and you can find out all the information. I think that there's a course coming up in Huntington this weekend?
This weekend in Huntington, August 18th. Next weekend at the Shawnee Sports Complex in Dunbar, August 25th. And I know that there will be other courses around the state, the Northern Panhandle, the central northern part of the state. And
Grafton
others.
Has one, I know.
Grafton is actually, they had one this past weekend.
Oh, that was this past weekend. Yeah. Okay.
But there will be other courses that will be scheduled as the instructors work with their local leagues and get things ramped up for the fall season. So keep an eye on that calendar. If you go to the Becoming a Referee page, there is a link where you can sign up to receive email notifications as new courses are scheduled.
Wonderful. Mike, I certainly appreciate your time, and thanks for coming on our podcast.
Thanks again for having me. Always happy to do it.